dbkmediaservices.com.
You are listening to the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SBC Sports Talk Podcast. SVC Sports Talk is brought to you by SVCSportsZone.com and Triple Crown Sports. And now, here are your hosts, Shane Combs, John Bruce, and Bruce Knox.
Hello, everybody, and welcome in to another exciting edition of the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SVC Sports Talk. My name is Bruce Knox, and I'm welcoming you to show what I believe is 271 now. Of course, all of them brought to you by Triple Crown Family Fun Center, located at 1 Nancy Wilson Way in Chillicothe, right off of Bridge Street, just behind the Hampton Inn. You can find them on the web for all kinds of detailed information at TripleCrownFamilyFunCenter.com. And you can give them a call if you have any questions, 740-773-7529. They are, in fact, open 7 days a week from 11 a.m. to 10 p.m. Now I'd like to bring in the two guys that do all the talking. And they know what they're talking about. They're talking about sports. Of course, first, Mr. John Bruce, fresh off a big vacay. Just Bruce, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you doing, Bruce?
I'm doing very well. You sound excited. We are taping. What day is this? This is Sunday, the 5th of January,
yeah.
Just before we head back to school, for some of us anyway. Are you headed back tomorrow?
Yeah, I'm kind of looking forward to getting back into normal routine.
Yep.
2 weeks off was nice, but kind of miss seeing the kids and kind of miss just doing regular things.
Stuff, huh? Okay.
Yeah.
All right. And we also want to say hello to Shane Combs. Shane, how are you today?
Oh, really excited to be back in the studio. As you mentioned, I always thank the Triple Crown for allowing us to do this. This is it's just something, you know, that we're really excited to get an opportunity to do. Make sure you get on the website there, check out their Triple Crown link for their soccer leagues and registration and so forth. And yeah, John, there was some things that came in. We remember 2 weeks ago we did the different type of show with the basketball teams, and then we took last week off. So as a result, you know, we get a lot of different things, and we're going to try to catch up here, which I'll get to in a second. But there were some different things that came in, and I just didn't know if it would fit for a whole show or whatever. You'll see a lot of over the last couple of weeks. Yeah, it's normal this time of year to get like plays of the year and athletes of the year and so forth. And then when you get to the end of the decade, people start looking back over the entire decade. There's been some different things in the media that I've enjoyed looking at. And, you know, if you agree, disagree, whatever, that's not even the point. It's a chance to just kind of let your mind think back and appreciate a lot of the different events and sports that we've had. I guess, you know, maybe down the road we'll do – I know we do some of our sports zoning and things like that for a year. Maybe down the road we'll do something like that in terms of the life of the website. But for now, I just wanted to start the show just so people didn't feel like I was ignoring some of that feedback. When you think back of over the past decade, you know, in your career or in our league or athletes, or I'll just kind of keep it open to you. What are some of the things that come to your mind? I know a lot of the feedback's had me really brainstorming and thinking, and I was just kind of anxious to get back on the air and catch up with you a little bit and kind of ask you that question to get started tonight.
Well, just, you know, kind of looking back just personally, just really being able to grow as a coach and, you know, one really cool thing for me was just being able to get back and graduate college. I took from about 2005 until 2011 off, just working different jobs and coaching, and then really as a personal goal, just going through and for about four and a half years, just really working hard and getting up 2 a.m. every day and eventually driving to Dayton and driving back and coaching. It was a lot, but it was really meant a lot to me and my family to be able to get through and finish. You know, it's kind of helped me coaching wise also to know how to schedule and how to kind of maintain myself. Then kind of looking back at the SEC, you know, had multiple state championships in the decade. you know, Westfall girls winning the softball state championship, you know, Paint Valley softball representing also, you know, several individual state champions in that time, some just amazing teams, Union of Basketball in the middle of the decade to the end of the decade with their 69 game winning streak in the boys side. You know, just some really elite talent has came through. You know, it was a really cool, decade athletically for the SVC. And, you know, and just looking outside, the growth of Chillicothe as a whole also. Look at the downtown. It gives you plenty of stuff to do. I think the 2010s will be looked back really positively when I look back on it.
Yeah, I think, you know, when I think of the decade, I guess if I start personal for a second, I really look at it as a decade that really renewed my passion for high school sports and for coaching, quite frankly. I think growing up and just into high school, college, just out of college, I was probably looked at more as a basketball, quote unquote, basketball guy in the community. I think more in the modern day, a lot of people associate me more with baseball because of, you know, the time I've spent as head coach and just coaching high school baseball in general. But, you know, I think of the website. I think this will make sense to you, Bruce. I mean, the website has certainly been right at the heart of renewing my passion for high school sports and coaching. I think, what was it, fall 2008, I think?
Yeah.
Was the website. So, you know, when I first started coaching, I was a 20-year-old varsity assistant coach. I actually, at the age of 20, was the head coach in 3 basketball games, John. And if I'm being honest, the strategy and the X's and O's and all those things, those were the easy things. I think the overwhelming thing was, you know, trying to manage egos and manage, you know, just community and manage just the overall program. And it was an experience. So through 8 years there, I was an assistant under 2 coaches. And then, like I said, a head coach myself for a couple of years. And I kind of really lost the passion. I was in my mid-20s and really lost the passion. And so this past decade comes along at the time where I start the website, and it really kind of just jump-started me. Obviously, baseball's continued to be at a center point, but the website's allowed me to really develop relationships with coaches through phone calls, emails, group texts, just, you know, having lunch with different people, different relationships have been really cool. So, you know, I'll be honest, I didn't see myself ever really trying basketball again at Paint Valley. So, you know, stepping back in here was a nice thing. I think the time in the decade I was with Eric Snyder at Huntington, that's something I feel like was a fun time. You know, now helping the girls, trying to build, you know, something just a little bit stronger than, you know, a program that's had trouble, you know, getting over about the 35% success, you know, mark throughout all time. You know, it's just something that I look back on now, and I'm really thankful for the website and the podcast and how it's important to me, because, you know, we've tried to keep it 100% SVC, where, you know, I certainly, as a sports fan, love the scoreboard show, love Sosa, love Gazette, love all those different things that are out there, but I really like the uniqueness of the website now. I know a lot of our listeners feel like they have a place to go. You know, I have a lot of people say, have you ever thought about doing a second show in a week? Or have you ever thought about doing a few more shows or whatever? And I'll kind of answer honestly is, you know, probably not. Just, you know, there's only so much time in a week to do. But I do think that we have a nucleus of people in the area that really look forward to this every week, and they appreciate what we've done. So, yeah, Bruce, I know you've been along the way the whole time for that. So that's just kind of you know, it's hard for me to think of the last decade in terms of personal and sports without thinking of SVCSportsZone.com.
Yep. And I was just looking here. I didn't know this until I just looked it up. But on September the 12th of 2011, episode 1, which we called our pilot podcast. Someday I'm going to go back and listen to that. It's on the DBK website. But man, I'll bet that's something to behold, because I'll bet we edited the crap out of that. And I don't remember, to tell you the truth, but I'll bet you that one was a good one. We ought to go back and listen to that, pull some excerpts from that and listen to Shane talk. And I think Matt was with us on that one. But
he was.
Well, yeah, it would be a good one, but that's 200.
And Bruce and I were just getting to know each other, and I think that he couldn't realize that, hey, this guy is seriously going to sit here and talk about high school sports for like an hour every week. I'm going to have to like push him along, or he might talk for three.
Yep, that probably entered the entered our conversation at some point in time. It was actually an hour and 2 minutes and 53 seconds. So you didn't do too badly that first time, but I'll bet you talked fast, and I'll bet you got a lot in that hour and two, almost hour and 3 minutes. But yeah, that's what, you know, when you look back on the 2010s or whatever you want to call them, that was 270 episodes ago. So that's, you know, 9 times 30. That's about what we do, 30 episodes a year. We've done a little bit more than that, I guess, because we're still in the, what are we, in the ninth?
We did
year?
Our live show, yep. Our live calls and all those things. Yep. So a lot of times those are just kind of some bonus things, yeah.
Yep, and I like the technology of it, and I like the ability to do it. I think one of my favorite things was just recently when we went to PV and did the playoff game, and just what we could do out there with some help from the technology people at Paint Valley. But boy, you know, it just seems that the one thing about high school that I've, you know, appreciated not being in the educational realm is that there every 4 years you get a whole new cast of characters and a whole new set of things to talk about. And some of these kids, you know, go along and graduate. So we've had lots. You just think about the names that have gone through the SVC over the past 9-10 years. It's amazing, some of the people and so forth. And it'd be interesting. Sometime we ought to do a where are they now kind of thing and talk about some of these kids that have passed through the SVC Sports Talk and have gone on. I think that'd be neat. But it's been a fun time, Shane. I appreciate you taking us along for the ride.
Well, it is. And, you know, I'm excited about the show we have here tonight. I think when I look at the agenda, as always, we have three sponsors that drive each segment. You know, North Fork Animal Clinic, Crown Hill Golf Club, and Advanced Services. Certainly appreciate them and the support they give the kids here in the Cider Valley Conference and allowing us to do this. We'll talk a lot, John, about Southeastern Unioto Girls coming up. A lot of talk about the Edina Boys. I thought there's some intriguing stuff there that, man, I've been asked a lot about them here over the last couple of weeks. Some X's and O's email in terms of a conversation John and I had on air a couple of weeks back. You know, we talked to Josh Jones there a while back and his records books and related to that, there's some stats questions. Some different technology, which I know Bruce will be intrigued by because I know Bruce always is intrigued by the way the game and the coaching and some of those things have come along. League attendance, job openings, that had a little bit more to do with football, but it's kind of opened up to any sport, and then balancing multiple sports. So, you know, again, with North Fork Animal Clinic, Crown Hill Golf Club, Advanced Services, we have a lot to get to, but I just thought it was neat to start with that decade thing there, Bruce. But, you know, that's basically some of the stuff we're looking to get to tonight here. If you're ready to get us rolling.
I am ready to get us rolling. And up first, it's the ladies. As we look at a matchup this week that's allowing the girls' game to take center stage. And our first segment is going to be brought to us by Advanced Services Heating, Cooling, and Refrigeration. You can look them up on the web, advancedservicesHVAC.com. They're celebrating over 20 years of serving Southern Ohio, and you can schedule a consultation today on the website. Call 877-947-4499, Advanced Services Heating, Cooling, and Refrigeration. Well, we've done all but just say what it is. On Tuesday, January the 7th, Unioto at Southeastern. Both teams enter 5-0 in the SVC and 9-2 overall. Shane, why don't you first up just give us a scouting report here on the Unioto Lady Shermans.
Yeah, obviously Unioto is a very, very talented team. They're an older team. This is a program that's really been built with the core thought of competing in the D2 tournament. I think Coach Miller's always done a good job of understanding that throughout his process of putting each team together. They try to play a very active physical brand of defense. You know, they'll occasionally extend the floor and overwhelm some of the lesser opponents, but I think, again, with that big picture in mind, this is a team that will mix and match some extended pressure and some different types of pressure, but they really hang their hat on their ability just to guard you in the scrimmage area. They have versatility. They're extremely deep. And then really what separates them is their different types of athletes that allow everybody to kind of stay in their role. You know, so many teams have the one elite defender, but John, where you get in the middle sometimes is when you're going to face a Graves or face a Basie or face some, mm-hmm. someone like that. Do you put the elite defender on them, or do you try to still pressure the point guard? With Uniota, they kind of have the type of athletes that allow you to do it all. So when I scout them defensively, what makes them so, you know, overwhelming at times is they can keep an Amber Cottrell on ball no matter who they're playing, if that's what Coach Miller chooses to do, because they have an athlete like a Hallie Pinkerton, even an Avery Miller on a versatile big. Then they can bring athletes like DeBoard, Paul, things like that people like that off the bench if they need to. And then, obviously Coleman and Stoller are still very athletic and can guard, but what that does is those being the top two scorers, it protects against foul trouble of losing some of your scoring punch. And then obviously an Alexis Miller comes off the bench and spaces. They just have a lot of people that just fit into the puzzle nicely. On the offensive end, they are experienced. They have great guard play, low turnover rate for the most part. I haven't been crazy about how they've closed a couple games over the break here, but they did find a way to win them. Good rebounding team, size and quickness. So, this is a team, John, I wish I'd have looked it up before. When you started talking about the Uniota boys, which is obviously a huge story in our decade, mm-hmm. It was a Southeastern girls team, right around that time winning, I think it was 40 right. in a row. And I think this Uniota team would enter, let me do some quick math here, 26?
I believe it's 27.
Seven? Okay, so I was close. Yeah.
It is 26, my bad.
Okay, so 26 in a row, and they're obviously used to winning. So I guess Bruce, those are some of the key things in a scouting report. I would say it's a team with a lot of confidence. They're seasoned, they're versatile, they have good depth, and they're really going to come at you. They're just tough to play against.
You guys are like an old married couple. You finish each other's sentences without even saying what you're talking about. So. Well, Shane, what about a look at the Lady Panthers from Southeastern?
Well, this is another team that just kind of has the perfect pieces. I guess if I was doing a John Bruce title, I could say perfect pieces for the Panthers.
Get see the what I did there? Going
the I guess this is kind of a situation when I look to scout them. I kind of think to myself, okay, this is what we'd refer to as the life after. Ella, as I would call it, but instead of rebuilding, they've kind of been able to reload. It just took kind of the 1 year to cycle it through. Macy Graves is a kid that's really, really good. She's kind of that in between matchup. In fact, she's going to be one of our featured kids. We have a good piece coming up, which actually John will be our coach's interview in a Great Seal Sports issue coming up. Really enjoyed that, John. I think the fans will too, where we talk some different things. Graves is one of the kids, along with Basie and Bennett and Newland, where we're talking about some of our stretch, kids with size that can really stretch the court and shoot the three, and how the game's changed in that way. But she's that in between matchup of when you try to go quick, she almost just size wise overwhelms you. When you try to go a little bit bigger, she's really tough to defend off screens and finding her 3-point line and off the dribble. So. She scores, she rebounds, she blocks some shots, and then obviously the X factor that's come back healthy this year, Skylar Heiss. She brings a lot of big game experience, and she scores and rebounds it. And she's the type of player needed on a roster to beat Uniota. She can match them athletically, and it's really put Sydney Huff into a nice spot. She's a kid that's proven that she can score double digit at the varsity level. Now she turns into that third scorer, so that makes them, when you think of 1-2-3 punch, man, that makes them legit. They ask Sarah Minton to do a lot of ball handling there at the point. Alexis Bells gives them some size. Audrey Scott does the same. Bells and Scott got a lot of experience here while Lindsay Skeens was out. I've noticed in the last couple box scores here, she's starting her way back right at the right time for them, so that helps. They appear to me to be a team that's based on tempo. They'll play a lot of solid positioning. They don't turn it over, and they don't turn you over much. But I will say, I can't help but what caught my eye, John, is when they had the big 50-point half against Westfall. So what that what that shows you is that's there in their arsenal. Even though they may not show it all the time, it's certainly there. So this is a complete team. With Skeens back, their depth's a little bit better. I know we joked a little bit on the show 2 weeks ago about certain things, but make no mistake about it. This Southeastern team is really good. They're capable, and I think it'll be a great matchup. So that's kind of how I would put the overview on those two teams.
Well, John, on Twitter this past week, you and Shane had conversations about the health of Emily Coleman. Also, Uniota has played three D2 opponents over the break and had a mixed bag of results. Talk to us a little bit about where Uniota is compared to Southeastern taking some time off over the break.
Well, in that game against Vinton County, the really good game right before Christmas, Emily got dinged up a little bit. Actually sat a half against Logan Elm in their loss there. She sat the second half of that game. And then she ended up not finishing the game at Courthouse. Although she said last night at the boys game that she was doing all right. So I would look for her to be back and close to 100%. But, man, they need her because she can kind of light up the scoreboard at times and plays really good defense as well. But Uniota played, four all pretty good D2 teams.
I guess it is four if you count the Vinton County. That was my
Fault. And it's going out challenging yourselves, and trying to stay sharp in that way, but also playing with those games, it doesn't give you a ton of time to work on some little things here or there. With an injury, still not getting the front court help back yet from those injuries, could make things, a little tighter this week for them if Emily's not able to come back close to 100%. It's definitely was a pretty tough weekend for them. Tough game on Thursday with McLean and a tough game with Washington Courthouse on Saturday. Like Shane said, didn't really finish those games off like you would want. But I do think there's a lot of people playing some different spots than usual to fill in for some holes. And I do think that'll help them in a tighter game that they may face on Tuesday night.
Shane, give us a key matchup to watch in this game and discuss other key things to watch in the girls this week.
Well, as far as this game key matchup, I think it's the Cottrell-Mitten matchup, John, if that's how Coach Miller decides to go in his matchups, which is normally what he's done. And the reason I say that is Sarah Mitten's been very, very efficient with the ball, but most teams, I think this will be her toughest challenge because most teams do not have the ability to apply pressure to Southeastern and then still guard the likes of Graves and Tice. Does that make sense? Where Uniota will be able to naturally match up with Southeastern and do both. They'll be able to apply the pressure, but then they'll also be able to athletically, feel comfortable in their matchups with Graves and Heiss and not have to send help as much like so many other teams have to do. So I think this will be Mitten's biggest challenge. She's obviously very experienced, very really, really improved with the ball, having a nice year. And I think she becomes a real, real key. When I watched Uniota do this with some different teams, that jumps out at me. I know now foul trouble has been a problem. Cottrell in the Logan Elm game, I know, got in foul trouble. So, when you throw in the Coleman injury and then you throw Cottrell in foul trouble, all of a sudden Uniota's, John just did a great job of describing, looks a lot different. She's an incredible defender. She is a little handsy at times, usually clever enough to with the hand check to kind of hand check show, which is a very, very difficult thing to teach kids in today's game. Mm-hmm. But if you get that wrong official some nights, you kind of have to adjust. So that's a big thing too in terms of how the game is called. And then kind of to finish off your question there, if I was going to go around the league with the girls, I think it's just the standings games, I call them. You know what I mean? The Southeastern will go on to play Edina Thursday. Jaden Smith, who was a Herbie Strange State Farm Insurance Athlete of the Week. Man, she's having some breakout games here. She's really starting to play. Win or lose the Uniota game, the Southeastern Edina game becomes a very, very important game for Southeastern as well. Westfall Huntington is a standings game. You know, Allison Basie, they're coming in averaging, I think it was 23-4 on our first update of the year. Our stats are up there, and I know she had 27 in that, which pushes her up closer to 24, and you know she's leading the league. I think now, if we were to re-update those, I think, gosh, almost by almost 8 complete points over the next person. So obviously she's an elite scorer. I think the Basie Mullins is interesting to me because those are two kids that kind of stretch it with 3-point shooting as a weapon. I know Basie's been doing a lot more on the drive and the free throw line. I know she hit her 9th three of the year the other night. Now on Westfall's update, we had some percentages. One of the things we did not have on Westfall's update, I know we have some Westfall people that listen to the show every week, if you could help us out here. We did not have their made three. So I do not know if Mullins is in that category. And I know she missed some time with some injury. So that's interesting. Then Piketon, Paint Valley, and then Piketon, Westfall, depending on what Westfall does earlier in the week and what Piketon does earlier in the week. All of those types of games here as we get to the halfway point, because Bruce, this Thursday night will be the halfway point for the girls. So that'll kind of give us a nice checkpoint to see where the standings are at. And so that's something for the fans to kind of to watch as well.
All right. John, any final thoughts on the girls?
I mean, really, Shane really nailed it. I was going to mention the Westfall Huntington game, but, you know, he took care of that.
That's the matchup itself, though, John. What? Yeah. I'm interested on your take because you know watching Huntington play and so forth. What intrigues you the most about that particular game?
Well, I'm still just trying to figure out what Westfall is right now. So from what I remember watching them from last year, I would think that they would have an advantage in that game because athletically they could throw some different people at Basie, but. You know, and could make it to where Huntington's got to have a second or third scorer, but it's just interesting to me because I just want to see what'll happen with it, because like you mentioned, the multiple scores for Westfall makes them harder to guard, but Huntington does have some good depth of athletes that can play defense at least, but can they score the ball to stay with Westfall? So that's where I think that game will be fun to watch.
Now, Steele did have 15 in the North Adams game the other night, and I think Howell Dyer had 6. So that's closer to the type of scoring I'm sure Coach Carroll would like to see.
Yeah.
All right, guys. Lots of action going on in the girls this week. Up next, we're going to talk boys, as it seems Shane's constantly answering questions about Edina from last year to this year to even looking ahead to next year. Stay with us, and we will explain. And our boys segment going to be brought to us by Crown Hill Golf Club, 9500 U.S. Route 22 West in Williamsport. Give them a call, 740-986-4653. Again, that phone number is 740-986-4653. You can look them up on the web as well at crownhillgolfclub.com. Give Kevin and his staff a call out there and see what they can put together for you. Spring, my wife told me today, is only 53 days away, so we've got that going for us. And doesn't look like there's a lot of snow on the horizon, so maybe if it quits raining, we can get out there and play some golf, guys. Hey, John, Boys League, now just one game shy of the first round being complete. What's your perception of the league right now?
Well, I do think there's a slight separation between the top half and the bottom half, but there's no nights off. You know, as you could see, Westfall knocking off Paint Valley in a tight game on Friday, and then goes to Huntington and loses, and Huntington gets their first league win. But there's no easy night. If you have to go to Huntington, or you have to go to the Dome, you have to go to the Oven. You have to go all these different places. Yeah, nothing's guaranteed, and you see, you know, Piketon played Zantre's very tough on Friday. Mm-hmm. That's a team that is going to be a whole lot to deal with the second half of the year, and especially going into next year, because I mean they really only have one senior. Mm-hmm. So Piketon's a scary team. I do think that defensively, I think the top half of the league can really lock you down, and I think that's, you know, there's some other differences, but I think that's kind of the big difference in that. Kind of disappointed over the break of how the league did in some of their non-league games, but I do think that with multiple D4 teams, we'll have a chance to have some interesting tournament runs as well.
Okay. Shane, same question to you. What's your perception of the league?
Well, if I'm being fair, if I'm being honest, it certainly hasn't been one of the more enjoyable leagues to watch. Games are very physical. Offense is hard to play. Several teams are really grinding it in the half court, which I think helps their defense. But at the same time, offense is just really hard to play off the dribble in particular. Let's see, Saturday night, I think in my notes here, if I counted these right, one team scored more than 50 points, and then Friday night. So you could say, well, that's back to back. But you know, if you go back 24 hours earlier, Friday night, five teams scored 51 or less. So it's just kind of what the league is this year. I think it's a perfect league. This Uniota team is really built perfect for this league. I won't get too repetitive of what I said 2 weeks ago. People can go back and listen there if they haven't had a chance to listen to our show before the break, where we really did a nice job of breaking down every team, boys and girls. But just to kind of summarize what I was saying, they're an old, strong, patient team. They're very disciplined in a basketball sense. I know there's times Coach Hoops has been disappointed with their composure, but I'm talking in basketball sense. They're very disciplined in what they're trying to do. So when you look at the talent of a Little or DeBoard, as long as – it kind of reminds me of some of those McLean teams over the years, John, where as long as Little and DeBoard kind of stay out of foul trouble – so many parts are interchangeable. You know, I mean, there's so much depth in terms of the scoring, the rebounding, the defenders at each position, so forth. So obviously Zantre's very, very good. But as John talked about, there's a gap. You can't take nights off, but I think we'd be lying if we didn't say there's a big, big gap from top to bottom half. So in terms of Zantre's, one loss might be as far as they can go. They might have to run the table to win this thing, or even get a share, depending on what happens. So the top half certainly loaded, in my opinion. Now, the bottom half, head-to-head, has some great parity. Honestly, some of the best matchups I've seen have been in the bottom half. I think Southeastern's a little better than people think.
Yes.
Coach Snyder at Huntington, we've watched him coach long enough to know that you just know that he's just not going to quit on it. You know what I mean? You just know he's going to come every night and try. He takes one on the chin Friday night in a game I'm sure he wished he would have played better. Saturday morning I had a chance to talk to him, and same old Eric. You know, he's just like, you know, you could tell he was up early and trying to figure out, okay, what do we got to do tonight? You know what I mean? That's just what he does. So credit to his kids there. Halbaugh hits the winner on the drive there to get that win. So I had a chance to see Piketon in person. And, you know, they're a dangerous group. And then obviously Adina, still very good. We're going to talk about them a little bit more later, so I won't go into too much detail. But, yeah, I guess that's where I come from. Yeah. I don't know if that's fair or not, John. You obviously get a different perspective. I'm just talking from a fan's perspective. Some of the games aren't the most enjoyable things to watch, mm-hmm. although I still appreciate the strategy. As a basketball person, I appreciate the strategy and so forth. I just don't know, Bruce, if you were just a common fan just going to watch basketball, if this would be the particular league you'd love the most.
I see. Okay. Well, you mentioned them.
John, is that fair?
I'd say that's, you know, that is fair. I think there's a lot to do with how the games are called, how you can scout now. I do think that kind of makes a little bit of the kind of muddies the game up a bit. Okay. I do think kind of how the games are called on Friday impacts how awful some of the games look on Saturday. Because the back-to-backs, you can just tell people are worn down a good bit at times in those games. So I do think that might be a reason on the Saturday games. Because, I mean, when we went up to Fairfield Union last week during the Christmas break, and they went played a tough game on Friday as we did too, and the first half of that game on Saturday was just whew.
I didn't want to be the idiot on Twitter that asked is 9 correct?
Yeah.
but I have to admit that was the first thing that came to my mind. I was trying to like check, you know, not so publicly, like, hey, is that score right?
Yeah. It was right, and I think if we would have done a couple things right, it would have been less. Man, it was, but you could just tell, and especially playing that game early, give the kids a couple less hours to kind of prep and everything. But, you know, I do think that has a lot to do with it, because just how physical the game is now, and how it's called, does make the Saturday night games a whole lot less pretty.
So Bruce, I guess the lesson to be learned is don't look down too much to make sure you have the right meat and cheese on your nacho there. You might miss some offense.
Yeah, you're exactly right. You know, I'm glad to hear you guys say that you're seeing more physicality throughout the league, because in the basketball that I've watched too, it just seems more physical as well. Maybe we can kind of talk about that at some point in time. But if that continues, I mean, by the end of the season, it's going to be a football game out there at times, it seems like, anyway. Well, Shane, you mentioned in your answer there, as you were given a rundown of your perception of the league, you mentioned Adina, and we kind of teased about it too. It seems to be a lot of the feedback and the questions and the comments. Talk to us a little bit more about Adina.
Well, I am. I'm fascinated by Adina, and I'm approached and talked to about them so much. And I think it's just a concept that unless you're really into sports, you may just not quite understand. And, you know, I've been outspoken over the years, not just on SBC Sports Talk, but in programs that I've worked or programs that, you know, maybe I've just been kind of a part of in some small way. And talk about the importance of scheduling and about the importance of everyone understanding the reason for your schedule. So, you know, we're up to a situation now, John, where, you know, what 36% of the schedule you have complete control of. You know, you play 14 games in the league, you know, you're going to play home and away. That is what it is. And, you know, I guess the only luck of the draw there might be the order you play them in, or like in the back-to-back, who you get on a Friday, Saturday. Obviously, Tina got a really tough draw this weekend. You know, but you do have control of 36% of your schedule. And you go back last year, Bruce, you know, Adina wins a district title. They have a great nucleus coming back, not just this year, but really for a 2-year period. You know, Zane Trace is loaded. You know that the recent history tells you that Uniota, it's pretty much proven that they have the program, they have the resources, that they're going to reload quicker rather than anyone, you know, compared to anyone else. So you knew they were going to be a factor. And you get to a certain point of where you make a choice to play certain people, and I'm okay with that. Again, there's no right or wrong answer here. It's just that there has to be an understanding of all involved. So this is a team that comes back this year, and it's going to play at Chillicothe, at Alexander, at McLean, and then play Logan Elm. They're going to play Logan Elm in a week where they have Uniota Zane Trace coming. And then even later in the year, even though they're not as good this year, they even have a Washington Courthouse program that, you know, in a lot of years, you know, very, very good. Mm-hmm. So I guess the only reason I say the one side is, to be fair in this, I want to talk about both sides here. On the one side, when you go and make it that tough, you know you're going to bring the possibility of losing into play. So what happens is when you lose, adversity comes along. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It's hard to be mad about your playing time, or it's hard to be mad about this or that or what. And I'm not saying these things are happening. I'm just talking in general here. Adina seems to be the topic of discussion, but please understand, I'm just talking in general. What happens is, in my 20-some years in coaching, baseball, basketball, whatever, all the way down, I don't care what level it is. I'm sure John sees it at the JV level. If you're losing, frustration rises. Adversity rises. If you're winning, you know, it's more positive. You know, even if someone's not happy, they are less likely to voice their concerns and so forth. And what happens is when you go through this adversity, you know, this team sits here at 6-5. But honestly, John, if I'm just giving my basketball observation, they've lost to five really good basketball teams that, quite frankly, on paper, might be better than them. You know, obviously, this Chillicothe team is crazy unique. We know how good Uni Oda and Zane Trace are. We know how good Logan Elm is. We know Alexander. Most years, that's not a bad matchup for them. But I know from watching this Alexander team on film now for three straight years that this is a year they're really, really high on. And you know, they're really good. So, you know, going to Alexander, to the Alley or whatever the heck they call it, place down there on a Tuesday night, you know, that's tough. So, and again, that's okay. That's okay. It's just, again, an understanding of what could come. So what happens is a coach and an AD get together, you got to sell it to your players, you got to sell it to your parents, you got to sell it to the community. And it's not just about this 6-5 start. I think the Adena community has to be patient and see big picture here. You play these types of games with the idea of let's play better, let's get better. And this is still a basketball team that when you look ahead to their schedule, this is still a team that's very, very capable of still winning 15, 16, 17 games and going back to the convo. I have no doubt in that, as long as they can handle this adversity the right way, better in the long run. You know, you look ahead to next year, very capable of beating that Alexander team next year at home, assuming these are two-year contracts and so forth. The CHS team next year is still going to be good, but still far more playable, you know, and so forth. So I guess that's just the take in terms of if I'm being fair on the other side, because it's not for me to tell Adena who to play or who Uni Oda should play or Zane Trace who to play. It's not even my business to tell Paint Valley who to play unless I'm the head coach. You know, it's simple as this. So all I would paint this picture, John, and I'm not trying to put you in an uncomfortable situation because I know you're a coach in the league. I'm someone who could talk more openly about this maybe. If Adena's 9-0 the other night, which could have very easily happened if the schedule's different. If Adena is 9-0 going into that Uni Oda game the other night, do you feel like they're a little less of a dent in their confidence? Because I kind of felt a dent in Adena's confidence compared to some of the Adena teams I've watched, you know, Adena games I watched late last year, early this year. And I'm not saying that would have been the better way to go. I'm just trying to show another side of this. So I have a high level of respect for the schedule they've played. I just, when I looked at their schedule 11 games into this, I saw the possibility of, gosh, they would have to play extremely well to be 7-4, 6-5 is a possibility. So I think Adena's fine. I think Adena is still, from what I've observed, the third place team in this league with the capability of competing with Zane Trace or Uni Oda on a given night. And I still think with Uni Oda going D2, I think Adena becomes a serious factor to still play into the combo, and so forth. I guess those are the two sides that I've tried to explain to people, because it seems like I can't go anywhere with people being like, man, what do you think about Adena being off to this start, or what do you think about their schedule, or do you think they should do this or that? So I just try to explain both sides, and I think you have to understand it and just be patient. If you root for Adena, I think you have to respect the process of what Coach Bradley, what the athletic director and the Adena community is looking at there and understand the big picture.
And John, we kind of do realize that you're maybe between a rock and a hard place, as they say, but what are your thoughts on Shane's comments there about the scheduling and the sales pitch to the community and the team?
Well, what I would say is that's still a crazy talented team. And it's mostly juniors, and you know, a sophomore in there. So I would say just keep your heads up. They'll be fine. You know, it's a really tough schedule to start. You know, but they're building something. If you look at, I'll use 2 years ago with, or 3 years ago, Uni Oda lost five regular season games because of really upping the non-league schedule and got to a district final probably a year ahead of time. And it paid off the next year when we we're filled with seniors. So, I mean, it's building something. It's, you know, and when you lose players like Fountain Fogelsong, no matter how much you're returning, you know, that's still really tough to do. And especially in the first half of the year. So you get through the first half of the year, 6-5, you know, maybe look at it like, man, that's a letdown, but they could easily go 9-2, 10-1, 11-0 in the second half of the year.
Mm-hmm. No question.
Yeah. Because the talent, the coaching they have, you know, they have some really good length. They play good defense. They play a kind of a unique style that makes you uncomfortable. If you don't have really elite guards, which just happens to be who they've played so far, have had just really, really good guard play. Mm-hmm. And I mean, if you take away the fourth quarter against St. Therese, the second quarter against Uniota, they're right in those games. Yeah, you can't just take away a quarter. And even with Logan Elm, they had a bad third quarter. So I mean, right. you take away those three quarters, they're even with three really good teams this week. So I think, you know, I'm kind of overly positive anyway, but and I really like the talent they have. Sykes, I think, has kind of turned a corner this year. Bennett's really good. Logan Bennett's really good. Hopefully Derek Garrison can get fully healthy. And I mean, that's a three-headed monster to go with, you know, McDonald, McKee, Doc Morton's great defense, Shipley and Smith shooting. I mean, that's still a really good team. And like you said, Shane, I do think they have a really good chance to get back to the combo as well.
And Bruce, when you're going to go 9-5, 10-4, 11-3, 12-2, and you have those types of expectations in the league, I'm okay with playing. I don't know if I would have played them all bunched together the way they did,
mm-hmm, right.
but I'm okay with playing this. I think where I kind of lean the other way for confidence is if you're a team that over the history of your program that struggles to win 3, 4, 5 SBC games, you obviously are getting pushed just fine in your conference. That's where I think you have to go out and play more like opponents or lesser talented opponents in the non-league just to try to help keep your kids built up a little bit. Because, again, winning breeds winning. You know what I mean? Like, you can talk all you want about playing better to get better, and I respect that. I do. But I think in today's time, John, we have so many more opportunities in our scrimmages, in our summer ball. I mean, things have changed so much into this generation. You know, when you look at the college football, I don't think you have to beat incredible teams to be incredibly good. Like, Clemson's obviously really, really good at football. Now, that doesn't mean they don't play anybody, because they don't. You know what I'm saying? But they're still really, really good. You know, now, that is a sport, though, where you have to win. You have no choice but to win all your games in order to get a chance to play for the biggest prize. Mm-hmm. I think that's the other thing that's unique in high school basketball is Adina doesn't have to go 20-2 to reach their postseason goals. Adina has the opportunity to take some lumps early in the year, get better from it, move on. Yeah, it could hurt you a little bit in seeding, but again, when you're really good, you think people are going to be thrilled. Oh, great, Adina's in our bracket. You know what I mean? No. They don't want to play Adina in the sectional. So it's one of those things that you can still grow from it, and you get the opportunity to still go. So I see both sides of how someone's asking about them being 9-0 compared to 6-3 and high level of confidence and Denon confidence and all that. And I respect both sides of it, but I just think that there's different philosophies to scheduling, and you have to go all in with the strategy that's been selected and make sure you trust the process.
So let
good topic.
Yeah, so let it be said, so let it be done from Shane Combs right there. And you had to bring up Clemson, didn't you? You just had to get that in there. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That still hurts. Guys, in our final segment this week, we're going to catch up on a veritable potpourri of fan feedback as we talk stats, film, attendance, job openings, and a balancing a busy time of year in terms of overlapping sports. We'll be right back. Our third segment of episode 271 going to be brought to us by North Fork Animal Clinic, boarding and grooming. 740-773-7387. Give Dr. Blake Lloyd and his staff a call. They are located at 2260 Anderson Station Road in Chillicothe, and they too have a website. It's NorthForkAnimalClinic.com. You can look up detailed information or just give them a call again. 740-773-7387. Well, we do have a boatload of fan feedback that we wanted to get to, a lot of it here, so let's kind of go as quickly as possible. I'm going to ask kind of both of you to keep your responses as short as possible here, but I also want you to explain a few things here. The first thing we're going to talk about is the Josh Jones book, our current stats and film, and then how that kind of goes all together with fairness. So, Shane, I'm going to let you lead this discussion as you're the one that gets most of the fan feedback into the inbox and so forth. So why don't you touch on just all that?
Oh, well, and you know how short I always keep my answers. Yeah. So I'm sure I'll
got you
I'll
on the clock right now.
Place here. Yes. Well, as he said, John, you know, with the record book coming out, the great interview we had and us running their stat sheets, I've had some people ask me about film and Huddle Assist. For people who don't know, is basically where Huddle provides a service. I know Crossover was a website that did the same, where basically the company will break down the film for you and produce a stat sheet for you. And so it's kind of an objective party kind of looking at that and with high basketball IQ and giving you those. And that's where the fairness comes into play. So a lot of times I think, John, the idea of integrity and so forth, technology certainly goes that obviously costs money. And that's something that school and athletic programs got to be committed to. But, anytime you do stats, I think the film is better when you try to keep them there on the bench. Obviously, that's very difficult. Another party doing it, I'm sure, would be a great tool. The biggest thing I had in my notes here, John, was, is it a deflection or is it a steal? Is it assist or no assist? Was it a deflection or a block? Well, if it was a block, it had to be a shot attempt. You see what I'm saying? All those things, impact things, and you're trying to make those. I guess I would just throw it to you in terms of, what's your idea of not just stats for today's time, but as Josh has shown, looking in the next generation, archiving these some fairness and how technology is affecting all this.
Yeah, I do think with the things like Huddle Assist or even just going back and watching the film, which I do a lot because, like you said, it's really hard to keep the stats on the bench. I think it'll make them kind of tighter stats than possibly they've been in the past. I do think that it's better for record keeping because, there's sometimes that I know Josh mentioned in the interview with you that the one year that Larry Jordan had like 600 rebounds, but we don't have any other years for it. Mm-hmm. I do think it's important to keep the stats. And I think if you're dedicated to it, I do think it's really good to use that Huddle Assist. You can even do it yourself through the Huddle app to kind of track the stats also, and it kind of puts everything together for you to where if you we'll say Cordell Grubb hit 5 threes in a game for Paint Valley, you could show his attempts and which shots are good shots, which shots are bad shots. If he hits 5 threes in a game, they're probably good shots. So I do think it's fair when we look at the stats on that.
And Bruce, what I think is so neat, remember last year we talked about game management and the scores table and so mm-hmm. forth. If you think about the most accurate stats on game night, it's obviously the score of both teams, the final score, but it's also the individual scoring. Mm-hmm. It's free throw shooting and it's twos and threes made. Mm-hmm. You get those from your book. Well, why is that? Because I have someone keeping it at the table, but I also have someone from the other team. And if they're mm-hmm. good scorebook keepers, what they do before they get up and go is they compare to make sure that they've matched up too. So, you almost wonder, some programs that have the opportunity to get, multiple people helping, obviously that's a lot easier to do if you try to extend that to other stats.
Yes, sure. I understand that. All right. How about SVC attendance? What can we do to maximize it is a question that comes in.
I've been asked this three times this year. So anytime you get one, you always put it in your notes, and then when you start getting it a second, third time, you start to realize, okay, this is out there more as a topic. Like I said, I've had three different people mention something about the lack of attendance, a lack of atmosphere at games, and so this is a loaded topic. Some people, John, are going to point to the 22 games instead of 20. The more overlap of boys and girls because of that, more all day events. Some people say the product just isn't as good. I mentioned that myself earlier. I don't know that that's it. I think people just have more to do. I think the football, we said it's once per week. It's the same time every week. Where basketball is all over the place. So outside of, I think our numbers going down. So if you're comparing, you know, consistent fans 20 years ago till now, well, 20 years ago we had 8 freshman teams in the league, mm-hmm. and you know, we had that many more cheerleaders, we had that many more freshman JV varsity players. I think that has a lot to do with it. As far as the atmospheres go, the only other thing I had in my notes, John, would be the different gyms. If you think back to the day, the Pitt, Adena, Southeastern then compared to now, and you know, we talked about as Uniota looks to build a new gym, be careful how big you make it. You know, I mean, you lose your atmosphere. Like, you know, some of these gyms, like a Uniota, like a Paint Valley, like a Westfall, like a Huntington, I'm not saying they're the most fan friendly, but they still produce some of the best atmospheres I've seen. You know, just when I think of the old school gym. So I guess those are some of the things in my notes. Just your thoughts on attendance and atmosphere.
Well, I think I remember when I was in school, I would go get my haircut at like Zane Plaza, and they would have posters from each school with the entire schedule on it. I don't think you see those anywhere. I don't know if people know. I think people know when games are, but I don't think they know where the games are. Hmm. If that makes sense. I think maybe more of a social media presence might do that. I know there's a few schools that put out stuff every time they have a game, try to get more people to come to the games, or ways to follow the games. I do think with all of the technology now, you're going to see the scores of the games, even if you're not there. So maybe you don't feel like you're missing out on as much. Now, for the atmospheres, you know, it's there's so much stuff for kids to do now, you know, and a lot of times kids have to work too, so it makes it really difficult to get huge student sections out. You know, the big games still have really good atmospheres. I don't think that'll ever change, but I do think that getting the schedules out, making sure everyone knows when these games are, kind of word of mouth things would really help boost the attendance as well.
Well, I think sometimes this – go ahead, Bruce.
I just wondered, is this – you mentioned social media. Is social media part of the problem as well? In other words, if it used to be if you wanted to kind of follow along the game, the only way you did so – was you went to the game. Now you've got you know, the social staff, or you got you guys or whatever tweeting, you know, quarter by quarter, if not more frequently about who's winning the game. So is that caused that one fan that's marginal to not go? I mean, is that part of it as well?
I think it is. I think it is because, you know, with the phone. I know the other night, you know, my game was pretty much over in terms of you kind of knew the final score, or you didn't know the final score yet, but it's over. And I found myself the last 4 or 5 minutes just all over my phone, back and forth with people on the Huntington Westfall updates. Mm-hmm. You know, because that was the exciting finish. So I think that's well said. I also would say, John, that I don't know how passionate some of the fan bases are, or maybe just the overall basketball IQ, and I hope I don't offend people on this, but it's just what I observe. I see big crowds at some of these big games, and I don't see the same emotion. Even at big games, I don't see the same emotion. You'll see teams run out. You'll see starting lineups. You'll see different things, and you'll see maybe 10% of a crowd stand up. Like, it used to be very commonplace. I can remember when the JV game was over, it was almost like an event was getting ready to happen, right? You know what I mean? It was like a crowd would come to their feet and then they'd run out. And then on the starting lineups, there's different things that, you know, places would do and routines and different things like that. I still see it some in the Southern Hills League. Bruce, where there's a little bit more passion, maybe, but I think it's something that our league's really lacking in terms of just a true passion. But I think all the points John just made are in terms of what basketball is maybe competing against is fair. But those are some of the things that I see, and hopefully we can do something to rekindle it, because I think, gosh, high school sports. Or that's what makes them so neat is just the communities and the atmosphere and some of the morale it can bring.
Okay, we'll seek feedback maybe on that in a little bit when we give some contact information. Next topic here, X's and O's versus player development.
This came from a topic that John and I were discussing. John actually touched on it earlier tonight. He's talked a lot about, you know, scouting and different things and how it's kind of put a lot of pressure on X's and O's. And gosh, and chalk talking over the years is I've made some friends and I've done some different things. Gosh, I probably compiled, you know, over 100 quick hitters and, you know, 5, 6, 7 different offenses and multiple defenses and a lot of creativity on OB unders. And it's just kind of neat to see how a lot of different people go about it. I think the films are out there. It used to be criticized, John, for sharing films, where now I think it's more the norm, and why we haven't just went ahead and made a kind of a regulated way to do it. I'm still not sure. It's kind of an interesting thing, though. I'll see a lot of different things out there. The one thing I'll say about player development is it is a physical game. I see a lot of fouling. I see a lot of inability to finish on the bump and so forth. But a lot of the lack of offense I talked about earlier just still comes down to just being able to dribble, pass, catch, and shoot. I mean, it's not that teams aren't getting looks. I just see a lot of teams unable to just make shots. When I compared a game to 20 years ago, I do think the weight room is important. So when I look at player development, I think weight room's important. I don't think you had to be in the weight room 20 years ago to be good. Now I still see a lot of kids with skill that maybe that are not in the weight room, but for the most part, I think that's more and more important in today's game. I see a lot of teams playing 3-on-5 at times, if I'm being honest, John. I don't know if you see this in your scouting, but yeah, you know, I'll see one or two just lack of threats. And that makes it easier to guard. So those are some of the things in the notes. I thought it was really interesting, some of the feedback on our discussion there. How much do you, as a coach, and by the way, your JV team's much improved. I really enjoyed watching you play the other night. From what I watched earlier in the year, how much do you look at your team struggling and think, okay, they need me here a little bit more. I need to interject here a little bit more with a call, a quick hit, or a different thing. Compared to when you watch film or you break it down, you're like, man, we're executing there, and we're simply just not good enough to make that pass or make that shot. What's the fine line for you in terms of distinguishing between the two on this topic?
Well, I just feel like the lower levels, I think a lot of player development, but also being able to run. The certain offenses, and I, like you said, you have all this, you know, this big library of quick hitters and things like that, and you know, when do you use it? It's just kind of, I think it almost has to be a feel for what your team needs at the time. If you have someone who can just go get you one, which thankfully for me, I got a couple kids that I can just say, all right, go get you one. You know, and that helps. But I do think it's important to be able to execute in the X's and O's, but also have the kids that can do it if things break down. Because if you look back, you mentioned the first time you saw us at that Huntington game, we had things break down at the end, and just we didn't just go get one. We just kind of lost control of it and ended up costing us a game. Where now we've been able to, you know, develop, you know, personnel in certain ways to be able to attack in situations where into clock situations, and we're better at that. So I do think the X's and O's are really important, you know, you need to have a system. You need to know what you're doing. But also player development on just being able to do the things, to make plays whenever things break down, I think is, extremely important as well.
I love what he's saying there, Bruce, because, you know, at the younger levels, I think you have to be stubborn sometimes and be like, no, you're going to learn to do this. Where, gosh, at the varsity level, if you're just dealing with what you're dealing with, there's times I've seen coaches say, hey, I had to tweak this or move this over here because he or she couldn't dribble with their left hand. I had to flip this play here in order to get them here so that they could go downhill to their right hand. And I'm thinking to myself, that, like, makes my head hurt. Like, that's where I'm just getting old and I'm not, you know, open-minded to things. Sometimes I'm like, what do you mean they can't dribble with their left hand? Like, you know what I mean? Like, so it's just that's good stuff. Yeah.
All right. Next topic is job openings, obviously in football for sure, but we've got some other sports where there's job openings as well.
I guess football is where this has come the most. I know it's kind of an off-season topic, John, but it's we say off-season, but we're smart enough to understand that these hirings need to take place, you know, sooner rather than later, just because of the year-round commitment. And I guess, you know, PV is obviously an elite program over the last, you know, 20 years, elite facilities, community generation and tradition. It's a school that knows how important it is, and they're going to support it financially. I think the Uniota is an awesome job. I've said for a while now in modern day enrollment, that football is a sport that Uniota should just athlete people to death in the SVC. I think they should be elite at quarterback all the time. I think they should be elite at skill positions. Now, Southeastern job, I don't know. You know, Carson Stouffer and Lane Ruby, do those guys, are they going to come along every 3 or 4 years? You know, history says no, John, but that doesn't mean they're not walking the hallway somewhere. Maybe they just hadn't played football before, or maybe they will now. So, I think scheduling is important. You know, you make 30% of your schedule in that sport. We talked about it earlier, Bruce. If you play Wheelersburg, Ironton, and Jackson, don't be surprised that you're 0-3. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's one of those where, you know, go out and play at least a couple schools. Give yourself, you know, whatever your talent level is or wherever you're at, give yourself a chance to be successful at 2-1, 3-0, and you're going to increase the likelihood of morale in your community and so forth. But I guess for the job openings that's how I feel about those three, but it is intriguing. Not very often do you see the three of the top teams in the standings open up. It is an intriguing year to hire, and I guess that could be said in multiple sports, but I guess this particular topic was about football. Just your thoughts on those particular jobs, John, and filling a varsity position.
Yeah, I agree on the probably need to get going on this stuff because, you know, your off-season program should be starting fairly soon, if not, let's say, tomorrow. So it would be important to start getting some stuff in. I love the Payne Valley job. I think Coach Holland's really put that into an elite level. Which it was already good, but now it's you know, they have a lot back. Uniota, like you mentioned, it really should be. They have some nice quarterbacks coming.
And in fairness to Uniota, they have in the last 4 years.
Right.
I mean, they've started to do this. Yes.
Yeah, they've started to play with what they probably should have for a long time. If we can kind of ignore the just 2000s decade of that. That is a really good job. Facilities are getting better. Still, they're not to, you know, where the Paint Valley facilities are, but they are improving. Southeastern job, I do think it's interesting. They've ran that same offense kind of top to bottom, and it's really hard to prepare for. And I know with that they have some nice pieces coming back. It's you don't have a Lane Ruby, but you still have a kid like a Mikey Nusser, and I would go to bat with that kid anytime. So I do think those are some – all three are good jobs. I do think it would be good for them to fill those jobs rather soon just to, you know, give yourself the best chance moving forward into the fall.
John, let me ask you a tough question, almost an unfair question to you. The Uniota Zane Trace, I don't think it's a big deal. Maybe Westfall, I'm not sure yet. But if Southeastern, does it concern you number wise in the long run, the way the soccer program seems to be established and growing? Again, I'm not saying that you don't want kids playing sports. I'm talking about selfishly, if you were right. looking at the football program, does that influence you at all?
For me, I think with Southeastern in the last couple of years, I would look at it as, you know, it doesn't matter as much, because of how, you know, the numbers haven't made it to where it affected the football program. But I do think that, you know, in the long run, it could, because it's not a big school. So having the, four sports with golf and cross country too. So, right. I mean, you got four sports at a, you know, Division VI school. That's really a difficult, you know, program to set. So I could see that being that could be difficult at a Southeastern. You know, Westfall, you know, the thing I'd say with them is the numbers haven't been great for soccer. So I do think that, you know, for them, it hasn't really made that much of a difference. And then obviously with UDO and St. Trey's have had it for decades now. I don't think it's, you know, I don't think it hurts those programs in the long run, but you know, when you're looking at Southeastern, I could definitely see how that would be something that would be something to look at.
All right, guys, our last, I guess, fan input here, fan feedback topic is overlapping sports for the multi-sport athlete. This one always gets a lot of play, and it seems like it never goes away for us because just by the very definition, it's overlapping.
Well, it is. Club volleyball is off the charts. You know, winter hitting and throwing is really increased all the way down to where you even hear like of A, B, and C, like little league teams getting together like as early as January and February and hitting them. And just it's, you know, it is. It's at a young age, there's a lot more specialization going on. Kids playing one sport or maybe just two instead of three, and therefore they get excited for that upcoming sport and it starts to overlap a little bit more. I guess you just have to use good judgment. I mean, our profession as coaches is really getting challenged more than ever. And I had one person say, and I'm quoting here, nice guys finish last. You know, and what they meant by that was if you don't step up and protect your sport and again, these aren't my words, protect your sport, you're going to end up falling, you know, behind. I guess what I would say to that is I just hope at the small school, especially, that you're supporting kids and you hope that programs are supporting each other. You know, if a coach is really supporting that club volleyball, you'd hope the volleyball coach is okay in the fall of letting kids get ball handling and shooting in. You'd hope if a basketball coach is okay with a kid hitting and throwing on the side, you would hope during the spring that on an off night or a rain night, that baseball or softball coach doesn't mind that kid coming into open gym. So you hope it just kind of works both ways. I think the word that really scares people is that power. I hear a lot of people say, well, this particular sport has the power at this school, so they're able to just kind of in the pecking order to almost bully the other programs and say, you're going to do this, this, and this, and then during our season, no, you're not going to go do that. So, yeah, now I'm not going to sit here and be blind and act like that doesn't happen. You hope it doesn't, but I know it does. You just have to kind of go about it, and you hope that coaches, for the most part, can keep kids first and figure out what's best for everybody involved. But John, I don't know. I mean, yeah, we've talked about this before on SVC Sports Talk, but it's a topic that just won't go away. I know it seems like about every January when a lot of these things start to overlap the most, probably January, and then June is probably the other because of all the off season commitments to all the sports.
Yeah. I believe that, you know, to have a school be successful, you know, especially in our area, really no matter the size in our area, you know, it's different when you go up north or to Cincinnati, anything like that, where, you know, you have such a large amount of athletes. I think it's incredibly important for all of the coaches to interact and like you said, be able to have a kid come in to open gym during baseball season if there's a night off or if there's a rain out or just even to go get shots up. And the same for, you know, during basketball season, if you decide if a kid's going to play baseball, let him get some swings in from time to time, especially if, you know, there's cages up. You know, mm-hmm. I think we should be building – it's really it, – kids are going to be better athletes, are going to be better at a sport if they do multiple sports. This, you know, focusing on one sport, if people think that, you know, the quality of sports is going down, it's because people are focusing only on one sport. You know, we're losing out on athletes, the 2-3 sport athletes that can really be elite, you know, by practicing these sports all the time. I know it, in soccer, it helped me to play baseball. Sometimes in baseball, I had some certain soccer skills that helped. I mean, obviously not kicking, but you know, with
I know what you mean. Yeah.
body movement and everything, and being able to read things. These sports enter almost every sport can go with another sport. Coaches need to get together and nice guys finish last, whatever, but you can work together to make every sport better.
I even put that on the athletic directors and the principals and so forth. That's got to be a culture foundation. That's got to be something of an expectation, in my opinion, as well.
Yes, I agree completely.
Guys, good job covering 5 fan feedback topics there. If you would like to contribute to what we might cover in the future, or if you have a thought or a disagreement or something on anything we've discussed, we'd like you to contact us, and you may do so by emailing Shane at admin1@svcsportzone.com. You can contact him on Twitter, where his handle is svcsportzone. He also maintains 2 profiles on Facebook, Shane Combs SVC Sports Zone and svcsportzone.com. For Mr. Bruce, you can email him at jbruce1018@yahoo.com, and you can contact him on Twitter at the ever-popular Coconut Wall Papa. And when these guys tweet, I might mention that they do use the hashtag SVC Sports Talk, so you can follow that SVC Sports Talk in your tweet deck or on Twitter or whatever you want to do. Search on that, and you can catch all the information about SVC Sports when these guys and others as well tweet about SVC Sports. You can contact us by the DBK Media Services voicemail line, 740-569-3254. Give a call, leave a message there. And if you're listening to us on iTunes, we ask that you consider giving us a great rating and maybe a favorable review. If you see our traffic on Facebook, please share it. And on Twitter, if you can retweet that. I can't believe I got through that without many more stumbles than I already had there. So that's the contact information. So we're taking it in the home stretch here. John, any closing thoughts, what you're looking forward to this week and so forth?
I'm just looking forward to it. I mean, we're going to have four good nights, or well, I guess 3, since we're actually not playing back to back on the weekend. 3 good nights of SEC basketball this week. Mm-hmm. You know, and then some teams play on Saturday as well. So with the junior high games, there's a game every night. So if you love SEC basketball, there's definitely something for you to do all week long. So I'm looking forward to that.
All right, Shane, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I got through a lot. You know, the only thing we might have shut out was some people talking about how to handle practice scheduling and so forth over the holidays when you had Christmas in the middle of the week and then New Year's in the middle of the week. It is a tough balance. The thing I'll say about team commitments, the same I would say about individual commitment. You know what I mean? When you respect the game and put the time in, usually you're going to maximize your potential, whatever that is. So, you know, that is what it is. I know that's a delicate situation sometimes when the holidays are involved. That's just kind of the way I feel about that. But check out the website. Congratulations, Cam Evans, over 1,300 points last night. Bryce Newland will also be climbing the 1,000-point page. I don't think, John, we'll have anyone else get to 1,000 this year. There's about 5 boys and 5 girls, both in the underclassmen, I think, will have a shot to someday get there. Allison Basie might be an outside shot at the very end of this year. But I think kids like maybe a Dudgeon, Coleman, Beal are going to be more in that 800-900 point range, I think. If I'm wrong on that, please someone correct me so we can follow those kids and highlight those. But that's a really cool page on the website as well. So we have our stats up. We'll try to update those weekly. Follow Cam and Bryce. They're on a 1,000-point page, and we'll continue to try to give some of those unique things that you don't get anywhere else in the coverage. So guys, on that note, great show. Look forward to doing it again next week, and we'll get on out of here. Reminder to fans to keep checking svcsportzone.com, and we'll always try to keep it 100% SVC 100% of the time.
You've been listening to the Triple Crown Family Fun Center, SVC Sports Talk. SVC Sports Talk is brought to you by svcsportszone.com and Triple Crown Family Fun Center. Join us next time for the Triple Crown Family Fun Center, SVC Sports Talk. And visit svcsportszone.com, where we're 100% SVC 100% of the time.